Welcome to Keep You 100 Radio. I'm your host, Lissy Pointer, type 1 diabetic, certified health coach, personal trainer, and founder of Needles and Spoons Health and Wellness. Inside this podcast, you'll find the real and raw conversations around diabetes management, including the lessons that we don't learn in our endo's office, my best tips and trainings, and conversations from the experts that I trust inside the community so that you can create more predictability in your diabetes management and feel empowered while doing so. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another episode of Keeping You 100 Radio. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with one of our alumni of Keep You 100. I love bringing our alumni onto the podcast to hear just more about their experiences and different journeys with living with type 1. I think we can all have different experiences shared and something to relate to. So today, I'm chatting with Morgan Cornelius. She was, again, a Keep 100 alumni. And I'm going to let you take the mic and introduce yourself and share a little bit more about you and who you are.
Hi. So, yep, I'm Morgan, and I joined Keeping It 100 about a year ago, maybe. Yeah, I'm 24 years old, and I grew up in Wisconsin, and I just moved back after a few years of, first I went to college in Colorado, and then I lived in Hawaii for a little while, and now I'm back here. I've had diabetes since I was 10 years old, and I was on a Medtronic pump for 10 years at that time. What else? Yeah, then I went off of the pump when I was in Hawaii and let go of my management a little bit for my diabetes. I just fell off the wagon here and there, and got very inspired after some health issues to just get fully back on the wagon and take control of my health. And yeah, so I joined Keeping It 100, and it was amazing for a few months. I think it ran for 3 months or something.
Just about.
Yeah. And now I'm on a tandem pump.
I can't believe that you're back in Wisconsin after being in Hawaii. I just feel we're having snow right now in Jersey, and I just can't imagine the fluctuating weather. So I give you a lot of credit.
Thanks. Yeah, 4 feet or something going on here. So it's pretty crazy.
Take us back a little bit into your diagnosis and what that experience was like for you. And just, did you just notice the typical signs? What did that look like with your family dynamic? Just, yeah, how did that all play a role?
Yeah, I was 10, and I personally didn't know. I didn't feel any different than normal that I could tell. But my family noticed that I was getting water in the middle of the night and going to the bathroom in the middle of the night and getting like ice in my water. Like I was clearly very parched or something. So they're like, okay, I think you have a bladder infection. And it was a day off of school that I had. And they're like, we're just going to go get your medication. Then we'll go home and we'll like play video games and have a good time and everything. And then the doctors came in and they're like, oh, it was like this big moment where I could tell my dad was like really distraught, and he started crying, and they were like, we found sugar in her urine and she likely has type 1 diabetes, so we're going to go to the hospital. And yeah, I was like so shocked because my parents were like so shocked. And yeah, so then we went to the hospital for a night, and I wasn't like super sick or anything that I could feel. I think my blood sugar was like 600 or something. Yeah, so that was interesting. Now I'm like, how did I not realize that I felt weird? But I guess when you're a kid, it's different. So
yeah, I was going to ask, like, how did you take that news? Because 10 is an interesting age. It's like right before your preteen years, but you're gaining this awareness over your body and but still not totally independent. So yeah, how did you take that news?
Yeah, I feel like I really blocked it out a lot in my head. And I was like, oh, it's fine. Doesn't matter, like it doesn't mean anything, there's a solution, so it's fine. And I was just super strong about it. Looking back now, I remember like a really vivid moment where we were back home and my dad had said to me, he was like, I just don't understand why God would do this to you or why God would let this happen. And now being older and learning about psychology and stuff, I can look back and I can see how I really took that as somehow I'm left out of God or of what's good in life. Something's clearly wrong with me or broken with me. And that was like a super subconscious thing. So I wasn't, yeah, consciously I'm all like strong and I'm just going to push through and it doesn't matter. And I'm like acting like it means nothing. But on an underlying level, I'm like super, super worried and feeling like, oh, maybe something's really broken with me or wrong with me. And I think that really affected me into my future
Yeah, I feel like we've all had very similar thoughts. You heard that externally, so that obviously plays a role in what you believe about your body and believe about yourself. I had, like, when I was diagnosed, I was 19, so I was a little bit older, but I had one of those same, I remember being on the phone with my mom a few weeks after I was diagnosed, and I was like, why me? Why me? Very, again, it feels like you're being, like, punished, or just feels like something's wrong with you. Like, how did that play into your teen years and living with diabetes through your young adulthood?
Yeah, then I remember just always feeling, I feel like by having diabetes, I could really tell how other people would judge. I always knew how it felt to be a person with just seen as different without anybody really knowing what that means or why. You could almost just feel everybody's confusion about you or judgment about you or hesitations towards you. Yet you still feel like a normal person on the inside, but people don't view you as like normal. They're like, what is up with her? And I remember as a teenager, I remember before my teen years thinking, oh, I'm never going to have a boyfriend. No one's ever going to be interested in somebody that has stuff attached to them. And oh, that was a big one for sure. And yeah, I do think it made me closer to some of the friends I did have because they were the people that really just treated me as normal and didn't, yeah. They didn't make it a big deal or shy away from me because of it. It made me appreciate those people more.
100%. How did it play a role in your social life? Did people make comments in school? Because that's also a very vulnerable age of going through middle school and high school.
I feel like I never heard any comments. I think people, maybe they did say stuff, but I think they really tried to like make sure I didn't hear it or anything. I felt like they would maybe avoid me more. Yeah, so not treating me like the other kids, just hanging out with me or saying whatever they want, but maybe they just completely shied away. It was like, I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when kids are uncomfortable with something, sometimes they just shy away from it. When they don't know how to address it or how to acknowledge it, they're like, okay, it's easier just to like avoid. So I can definitely see that. We had, when I was in high school, there was only one kid with type 1 diabetes. And I just remember, I wasn't in any of his classes or anything, but I remember how other kids would talk about him. He was totally fine, like a cool kid, like totally fine. But people would make jokes of, oh, Sean and his diabetes. And I just remember it being like something people not laughed at in a sense of like they were making fun of him, but they like joked around about. And I'm like, thinking back, I'm like, if I was diagnosed at that time, like how would I feel about those comments? Or like, it just shows how naive we are to the experience of living with diabetes, especially at that age.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. Like now where I work, it's like a basic 9-to-5 job, but I'm more of a shy person in general. And so I feel like people got to know me as like the diabetic girl. So it's just what people resort to for talking and yeah, making jokes and stuff. But I guess I'm fine with it now. But yeah, it definitely has like a weird kind of cold feeling to it. I wonder what it would be like if people just knew me for who I was type of a thing.
Yeah, like there's more to my personality than diabetes. It's a part of me, but it's not all of me. Do you still feel that way now, like in the work culture and social life?
A little bit. I think, I feel like at a subconscious level, I really was aware of this and didn't like it. I feel like when I was in Hawaii, I haven't really thought about this till right now, actually, but in Hawaii, I noticed looking back, like where I was living, it was very health centered and health focused. And a lot of people are just super into health. And so I didn't want to be seen as somebody broken or unhealthy. At that point, I went off of my pump. I was really just trying not to have people see me for my diabetes. And I think it made me not test my blood sugar as much, not take my insulin when I needed to, all of that, because I just didn't want to be associated with it. Yeah, it's fascinating to look back, and now I wish that I could be and like hope in the future that I can be so much more like empowered and just proud of who I am and like confident within myself that I don't need people's approval of me to see me as like this perfect vision of a healthy person, or they can just think whatever they want about diabetes and I don't have to let it affect me or change how I show up, because that's definitely what was happening.
I love that. Yeah, if you don't mind talking about this, and because I know it can be a little personal, so if you do, I can totally edit this out. But when we had first talked on your consultation call, it was, I believe, right after you moved home from Hawaii, and you were walking me through the experience of living there and what was bringing you to wanting to take more ownership of your health and figure out things and take a fresh start. So do you mind walking us through what that experience was like and the point in your management that you were at and what brought you to wanting more support?
Yeah, so this is a big one. Yeah, this is a crazy story and I'm excited to tell people about it because I never saw myself as being a diabetic. I never saw myself getting into this situation. I went to a diabetes camp growing up and I remember there would be the kids that were like known as the kids that were in denial of their diabetes and they would try not to take their insulin and they would be like, no, I'm fine. And they're just in complete denial and not like taking care of it. And I had never understood that at that point. I was like, I don't see why you wouldn't just take as best care of your health as you can. What? And then when I think by this time, so I was 20 or 21 at this point then, and I met this health guru guy who like helped people heal from injuries and all of this other stuff. So he seemed very, he made himself very like someone you would listen to for advice, right? And he was like, oh, just so you know, like I've helped so many people get off of insulin and like type 1 diabetes. And I'm like, type 1 diabetes or type 2, you know, because the difference is huge. He's, yep, type 1, like for sure. And this is where I can see how not embracing my diabetes, the psychological effects that nobody ever addressed or the emotional effects that diabetes has on us. I think because nobody ever looked at that, that this was like under the surface the whole time, is that of course I always wanted to be, I wanted it to be curable. I just wanted to not have to deal with it anymore. I didn't want the low blood sugars and the, because it's such a, on a daily basis, all the little things we have to go through. I think that just built up in me and I had it up to here. And I was like, okay, if this guy's going to put this out there for me, I'll take it. I'll listen to him. So I basically listened to this guy and was just going by his advice. And his advice was essentially to wean off of insulin little by little and that my body would learn to make it. And he had this story. He was like, they call it the honeymoon phase at the beginning where you don't need much insulin, but really what's happening is you're starting to introduce insulin to your body. So your body's going to make less and less of it. And I was like, oh, that actually makes some sense. So maybe. Yeah. So he just had this whole theory about it. And so I was weaning off for 8 months. I was taking less and less. And at this point, I would say I was in like diabetes denial. Like I wasn't testing my blood sugars. I wasn't having any lows because my blood sugars were high. I was losing weight. So people thought I looked super healthy too. Oh, you look so good. Like you're so beautiful. And I was, yeah. And then eventually I went into DKA and it was like very slow. So I think my body was like fighting it off. It was like over a week. I thought I had COVID where I couldn't really breathe well. I thought I had shortness of breath. But if you've ever been in severe DKA, you also get, you start hyperventilating. So then where I was living, my landlords called the ambulance, which was good. And so the ambulance came and they worked on me for 30 minutes. I was so dehydrated, like they could barely get the IV in my arm and stuff. And then I went to the hospital for 2 nights. And I just remember feeling this relief and this like thankfulness for Western medicine and for the insulin and for the IV and all of it, all of this stuff that this other health guy was so against. And he basically made Western medicine out to be like the bad guy. So yeah, that really shook me. And I was like, holy crap, trying to be healthy did the exact opposite. And if I would have just embraced this part of myself, I would have been able to be so much healthier. And I think from that point, I could see like all the little ways that I wasn't taking care of my diabetes and how that was impacting me. Whereas before I thought, I was just in such denial of it, I just couldn't even see it. So from that moment, I was like, okay, no matter what I do, I'm going to get as healthy as I possibly can, physically and mentally and emotionally. Because at that point too, I could see this goes beyond just our physical health. This goes into our psychological health, our emotional health, our mental health. There's so much more to this. And at that point too, I was open to getting help from other people because I've always been the person that's, I'm going to figure it out all on my own. I'm going to do my own research. I've got this. I don't need help. So when Keeping It 100 popped up, I was like, wow, I love this. I saw that you had taken diabetes into your own hands, which is what I was looking for then. Because when I did go into DKA, that was me trying to take it into my own hands, but it wasn't working. So it's okay. let's embrace it and see what happens. Yeah. So when I found Keeping 100, I was just ready for the support, ready to know all of those little things I've never known before, stuff like that.
I am so thankful that you're open to talking about that experience, because it is more common than we think. I've actually had other people share similar experiences of, I've heard, I read online that I'd be able to get off insulin, or if I just do X, Y, and Z, I'll be able to come off. And even when I was diagnosed, because again, I was 19, young adulthood, didn't have anybody in my family with diabetes. So I had heard a similar thing. My brother and his friend were saying, like, when you start taking insulin, your body becomes more dependent on it. So that's why you're insulin dependent. And again, it made sense when you're thinking about it, because there may be other medications that do that. And I'm lucky enough that I presented that to my endocrinologist and I said, hey, this is what I've heard. Is it possible that maybe we're wrong here? Maybe insulin isn't the best course. And she just looked at me like very empathetically, and she had said, I'm so sorry, but that's not correct. And you are insulin dependent. And I remember that was soul crushing, that I cried in her. That was the first time that I'd realized, oh, this is permanent. But all to say, I'm really sad that it took that experience to get you to where you are now. But in a way, it was almost a blessing in that it got you to where you are now, of like, it, you feel empowered in your management, or you were ready to feel that way. So like, when you, like, let's say after that experience, what were some of the first steps that you took to take diabetes back into your own hand? Because like you mentioned, like, it's not just the management, it was the emotional factors, the psychological factors. What were those things that you did to work on all areas?
Yeah, that was a crazy experience. Because at that point, I was at the point where I was ready to be healthy again, embrace insulin again, like all the things. But I had, as we know with diabetes, there's so many little habits that add up to our maintenance. So I had fully let go of all of these things and developed new habits of what I was basically doing to maintain my health as I was suffering. So it was like so slower. I'm like, okay, I'll test my blood sugar once a day. And then let me test my blood sugar twice a day. And it was like hard to remember to do these things. And then I had to start, I was so embarrassed that I wasn't like working with a health professional to get my numbers back on track. I was like, okay, I'm going to get my rates back on track. I guess I had to pick up Lantus again. I was not on any fast or like long acting insulin at all. So I had to start doing that. And it was sad to realize like how many little things I had to start doing again. And it was such a relief at the time when I wasn't doing any of those things to not have picking up prescriptions on my head, or yeah, doing shots or testing, like all of those little things that we do every day were just off my shoulders. So then I was slowly adding those back in. And I think I was really trying to hang on to the gratitude that these things exist. And I remember I went back to that story of 100 years ago, what the diabetics had to do to stay alive and what their insulin pump looked like. And it was like this giant backpack. And how they would have to pee in this vase thing and look at the color of it to figure out their blood sugar, something crazy. I don't remember. But I was like, okay, I'm thankful that these things are here and they do exist. And that's what I'm going to kind of use. And then slowly I stopped talking to that guy. I told him, hey, this isn't really working. And he wasn't really interested. And to him, if it's not working, it was my fault. It wasn't the truth. It was just my fault. I wasn't doing it well enough or right enough or whatever. But yeah, very slow process. Another thing that happened was like, I went from, so my normal weight before this was like 130 or 125. And then in the hospital, I was like 105 because I had, my body had eaten all of the muscle and fat off of myself. And then when I started taking insulin again, I shot up to 180 because my body was like hoarding any energy that it could find, basically. So yeah, there was so much compassion during that time of just opening up to, wow, this is serious. This isn't what I thought it was. And I think I just appreciated my body and my health and the fact that it could go through all of that suffering and then bounce back as well. Yeah, like you said, I wouldn't be where I am now if it wasn't for what happened. I did need that closure in a sense, because it was like this subconscious underlying curiosity of, do I actually need all this stuff that Western medicine says that I do? So now I have complete closure on that topic and just so much more gratitude and appreciation for all of the health things. And that is, yeah, that's so nice. And I didn't realize it was common, like you said, like when you're in that experience, you feel so alone and so isolated. And you already feel alone and isolated, I think, when you're diagnosed, because you don't know people usually that have it around you, maybe like a person here or there, but in your day-to-day, it's easy to feel super isolated. And so especially then when you're going against the grain of this already small bubble and you're like, oh, I'm going to fix my health. Then you feel self-conscious, or I felt self-conscious and I felt embarrassed. And yeah, it was like digging myself out of a hole. And at least I knew I had 10 years of experience prior of like really good health. So I knew how to set my little bolus targets and how to adjust them like myself, which a lot of people also don't know how to do that. So that was a blessing too.
100%.
So a lot basically in small incremental steps.
Yeah, it's really interesting how you can go from almost overwhelmed or resentful of these everyday things, like you mentioned, like testing your blood sugar and taking your insulin, and those things can pile up and feel really overwhelming and mentally taxing. And then on the other end of the coin, or the other side of the coin, you're like, oh no, I'm so grateful for these things and the access that I have and the fact that like I can keep myself alive with these things. Because it, like what you're saying, like thinking back to the like old school ways of managing your blood sugar. And then I always think of I forget what year it is. It's if you were diagnosed like X amount of years ago, like the result was the starvation diet. That's like the thing that we had to do to manage diabetes. And now we have all these tools in front of us that allow us to live and thrive. So I'm glad that you're taking those with more, like you said, giving yourself compassion and using these tools as a form of an empowerment. And I'm just curious, because you had mentioned you were living in Hawaii at this time and it was a very health-centered community, and maybe health should be taken with a grain of salt in that way, because like you just mentioned, what you were doing for your health wasn't actually conducive to your health. But when you were like talking to friends and family back home during this time, did they know what was happening, or did they say anything, or was it just you were just doing what you thought was best for you and not talking to anybody about it?
That's a good question. The guy that I met, I remember a few days afterwards, he was like, yeah, you probably shouldn't tell anybody about this. Do you really think they would support you? And I was like, oh, yeah, no, they definitely wouldn't support me in this. You're right. I should just do this myself and let the results speak for themselves, basically. Show them, improve them. So I was totally keeping it from everybody. It was like my little secret. It was... yeah. And I'm amazed now looking back that nobody mentioned, hey, you look like a little too skinny. Are you okay? What's going on? Yeah. Because then I've been getting my weight back to baseline, back to normal. And some guys have already noticed here and they're like approaching in a genuinely helpful way. Are you okay? You've lost a lot of weight. Because I went from 180 to 150, which isn't crazy, but it looked like a lot on me. And to actually receive their compassion was so nice, because in Hawaii, in a place where, at least where I was, where everybody is super skinny and super healthy and like health oriented, nobody noticed that I was only like 105 pounds. Like it was, yeah.
I was just about to say, yeah, when you're losing all this weight, people at home they would probably approach it with concern of, hey, are you okay? Or is your management okay? Like, how can we support you? And there it's, oh, you lost weight, you look great. But you're like, no, I feel unhealthy because I'm not getting the things that I need. So it's this interesting, I think it's just like a testament to that we need to understand what health means for us. And I remember getting the same comments, like it was more in the beginning of my diagnosis, but again, I had dropped some weight. I'm naturally petite, but I went from 110 to 95. And I remember posting a picture on Facebook and being like, this is a result of diabetes. Like I lost 15 pounds. And I remember someone commented it and they're like, I didn't know diabetes gives you abs. Huh? And I'm like, this isn't a good thing. It's not, I'm not posting this because I'm proud of this body. I'm posting this because it's a real result of not getting the things that my body needs. So it's just very interesting.
Body eating itself. It's not like losing weight, like a healthy loss. It's eating itself. Disturbing. Yeah. So Yeah, like going to the gym now is like different than it was, because now I know I'm like rebuilding my muscle and I know how much I love my muscle and how important muscle is for our health. Whereas, yeah, because of that experience of my body was eating its own muscle, and that felt awful afterwards to just have that truth like in my face. Oof, that's what I was doing. But
yeah, so now we have these two different senses of community, right? So you had your community in Hawaii that maybe, again, you at the time you thought it was for the sake of your health and you thought you were doing the right thing. And then you went on the opposite end and found community in KB100. And obviously we take a very different approach than what you were doing. So walk me through, like, how did that feel to have a community that embraced diabetes? What were some things that we were working on together? What did that time look like?
Yeah, that was really, I remember the first call. I don't remember what it was. It might've been like a question and clarity call or something, but it was just amazing to have people drop in and talk about something that I'd never or rarely been able to talk about. At diabetes camp, it's different because you're a kid and you're trying to still fit in with these people. But to be an adult and just talk through the basic things, that was so special. I just remember this, it was like this somatic feeling in my body of like relief and like being seen in a way that I've never experienced before. Yeah, and I think because we deal with so much on our own as type 1 diabetics, and we try to talk to the people in our direct lives about it, and they can only relate from the level of not having diabetes. So to actually just talk to type 1 diabetics and not have to explain anything and to receive like advice that you've never really heard before is really nice. And yeah, and I feel like also all of us each being isolated in our own management, we do come up with like really creative solutions. And when you talk to people like other type 1 diabetics, you end up hearing all of these different things that you've like never heard about before, and you probably wouldn't have heard about if you don't willingly go to that community. And I think joining that community, that was like one of my primary intentions. I realized with my management, I'm either directly choosing to have control over it or slowly falls away. Yeah.
So what were some things that you did to find that balance again, especially because you were, remember, we were just working with, so you were on MDI at the time. So you were working with your long acting and your short acting and rebuilding the habits that you wanted to get back into. So what were some of those that looked like? What did those look like for you?
The habits?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really helpful. The strategy to pick something small. I don't even remember. I think you used part of, was it NLP or something, to help us find a habit that we could actually lean into and feel comfortable doing. That was huge, because prior to that, I had been basically setting these giant goals for myself or coming at it from a place of pressure and force of berating myself. Oh, you need to test your blood sugar this much. You need to start counting your carbs this way. You need to do this. You need to do that. And it was always this long list of what I needed to do. And I would just try to do it. So to make a small doable goal that is in that direction that I can actually be fully on board with, like with my conscious mind and my subconscious mind actually fully wanting to do it, that was so helpful. And it just made things a lot more seamless as far as making progress in my management. Because yeah, I think ever since leaving home and going to college and traveling, it just gets put on the back burner. And it's really actually, I've never looked at how actually hard it was to make any sort of progress in my management. It's always been at just a steady, shaky level of management. Yeah, so I think some of those, I was trying to just make sure I took my Lantus at a certain time every night and stuff. So I would set it up with my toothbrush in a place where I would remember it. And so then it wouldn't require all of this thought and all of this pressure on myself during the day. I could just go about my day and then be reminded to do those things.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you said that, because I feel like a lot of people think that whether it's a coaching program or anything that you do involving your health, whether it's focusing on nutrition or a workout plan, whatever it is, it feels very checklist mentality of, okay, I just have to do X, Y, and Z. I always think back to the 75 hard challenge where there's like a set of rules. And in reality, like, you want to build a routine and a lifestyle that works for you no matter what the circumstances are. And that's exactly like, I remember what we were working on. I think at the time, like when you're taking your long acting, you had to do something like, okay, before bed, I open up my book and I take my long acting, or I'm trying to remember the anchor that we had set up. But yeah, it's just how can we make this feel as effortless and natural as possible? So then you have more brain space for all the other things that you enjoy doing. You had just mentioned you're studying psychology, and there's so much more than just diabetes, and how do we make it all fit in? So I'm really interested in hearing, especially this is catching up for you and I too, as we haven't had time together in about a year or so. What does life look like now? What have you been up to? Like, how are things looking since our time together?
Yeah, so much better. I remember I looked back or thought back to where I was at before the podcast of the time of keeping it 100. And I remember, for example, for my exercise, because I was still more overweight, I couldn't exercise the way I used to, and it felt strange. So my goal was to get out for a walk every day and take a really long walk. And that's what I was doing. And since then, now I'm like back at the gym every day, not every day, but most days. And I love it. And especially working with my cycle too, of taking it slow when I'm in my luteal and menstruation, and then letting my follicular phase and stuff be higher energy. That's helping a lot. What else? Yeah. I feel like I've been taking this, that same approach of making realistic goals that we are fully able to do, like small steps. I've been doing that kind of with my life. And so I feel like a lot more organized and a lot more just compassionate towards myself and towards any progress that I'm making in any area of my life, which is really nice. Yeah, my A1Cs are back to a really good level. And now I just got the tandem pump too. So I was on MDI, and that was, again, came from me like despising the pump, essentially, like being attached to me. So I went on MDI for a few years, for three or four years total, maybe. And it was nice to have this really grounded perspective on it and be like, okay, it's not worth having these like nighttime lows or early morning highs. Like, it's not worth it anymore. And so embracing my pump and actually being grateful for it, that's huge. Yeah, I would just say overall, not having, the main difference is that I don't have that cloud of like judgment over myself, that cloud of pressure. I just know that I can trust myself to be on my own side no matter what. And through any situation, like I've been practicing really sticking up for myself. If I forget my insulin at work or something and I need to run home, I'll just be really direct and I won't just try to pretend like everything's okay and get through it and let my blood sugars go bad. Yeah. So yeah. It's a big kind of emotional change.
It's so empowering being like, no, I know when my body feels best, and like obviously to do these things, like whether it's at work, like to be the best like employee that I can, I need to take care of my body. So this is what my body needs, or this is what I need to do. That's what I'm going to do. But that makes me so happy to hear that everything just feels, or it sounds like it's like very just in flow, like you are able to just be. And that's very exciting. I'm glad that you have a great relationship with the pump. And I'm personally really excited to hear about your experience, because like we mentioned before we hit record, I'm probably going to be leaving Omnipod for the tandem. So really excited to hear about your experience. But I don't know if you've listened to the end of our guest episodes before, but our last question that we always asked, and I didn't put this in the email, but if you could give one piece of uncensored advice to anybody listening about anything that we've talked about, or just anything in your experience of living with diabetes, what would that be?
Ooh, it would be to be nice to yourself and to trust that there is a way, and that whatever you're stressed about right now, there is a solution. To be open to receiving help, and yeah, to be kind to yourself throughout the whole thing, because it doesn't help to get mad at yourself or put yourself down or anything like that. Yeah, so just trusting that there is help out there. There is a way out there to help whatever you're struggling with, and to trust that in all of the many little times of chaos that we all experience.
I love that so much. I'm so grateful that you were able to come on and we were able to catch up and hear more about everything that's happening for you. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.